All right, guys. So podcast with me today is a dude who I have been almost stargazing over. Good old Mr. Wyatt Stav. Is that how you pronounce your last name? Stav?
Yeah, you got it, Stav. 100%.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude. Since I got that email back, I was like, yeah, we can do that. I hit the ground. I was like, I've done it. How's YouTube life?
It is what it is. I don't know. It's the same as everybody's life right now, stuck inside, you know.
I mean, I guess when it's kind of like your whole style is basically like just recording videos inside, it kind of, I feel like there shouldn't be a big like switch between like how COVID affected.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably most prepared because, you know, before COVID, I had already done 2 years kind of inside, but like all my coping mechanisms that kept me from going insane were taken away with COVID. So like I made sure like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I made sure each week where like I wasn't a second in the house, you know what I'm saying? And then even throughout the week, like there were certain things, like even just going, having the ability to go to the gym in the morning that like gave me time out of the space in which I work. So when all that was taken away, it sort of launched me back into like the adjustment phase that I had sort of gone through 2 years prior, where I was first quit my job and I was doing what I do now full time. So yeah, man, it's like, I don't know. It's just like, I've had a lot to get used to, you know, again, I guess. So yeah. And yeah. I have new coping mechanisms that kind of cropped up along the way, I guess. So.
That's good. I feel like everybody kind of really realized just how much they can lean on themselves in a way too.
Yeah, 100% for sure.
So,
elsewise, you're going to drown out here today.
Oh yeah, dude. I'm ready for shows to be back as much as I know you are. Like I'm heavily ready for concerts to be back.
100%.
So, obviously you're a drummer on YouTube and yes, sir. I guess reaction channel. Now,
I guess so. I don't like to say it, but I guess that's what it is.
Kind of moved into a plethora of things.
Yeah.
What made you like get into like drums? Like, what was your first big experience that was like, I want to do that?
I was like born with a kit in the house kind of thing. There wasn't really like a big experience or nothing. I guess it was just like, I can send you the picture if you want to edit it in, but there's like a picture on my desktop of me at like age 4 with sticks in my hand. So like to go back to the beginning, I don't really remember. My parents it just like always suit my personality, for sure. You know, like I was always like super high energy, like, you know, like ADHD kid kind of thing in the classroom, you know, never got good grades in school. Just like all the things that kind of go along with being a drummer. I feel like I had all that. So it like working with that instrument just made 100% sense to me. I tried guitar too, actually. Like I first was on the drum kit at a really young age. My parents got me a kid like 4 years old. And it wasn't even getting me a kit as much as just having it in the house for me and my brother to mess around on in case we were interested later down the line. And then I actually said to him, like, hey, I want to learn guitar. Because my buddy down the street, my neighbor, who I also was going to school with, he had a guitar. And his parents told him, if you start with piano, we'll let you get a guitar and you can take guitar lessons. So he started really young on piano. And then shortly after, they did both with him. And when I saw him play, like I saw him play like Smoke on the Water, like nothing special, just like whatever, just like, you know what I'm saying? And I saw him do that and I was like, that's music. You can make that with your hands. What the f-? Like, I lost it, man. I was like, no way, you know? And then I was like, mom, dad, I need a guitar. And then I got a guitar and it was like one lesson later, I was like, this is not the one for me. This is not the mark. Not at the time, at least. I mean, I'm playing guitar now, but that's like because I, you know, became an adult and I kind of got over, I guess, just like the sort of raw personality traits that we're all kind of, because you know how it is. We all start off a certain way, but you age and you change so much. It's like you don't even recognize yourself in a few years. So, yeah. So I started guitar and then I went to the drums after the guitar didn't work out just because drums were like so easy. There was no friction, whereas the guitar was forcing myself and I didn't dig that. I wanted like a real escape from it all. I didn't want another thing that I had to kind of work at, you know? So.
Yeah, I feel that. I have two guitars actually sitting right beside of me. And when I first started, it was in high school and I was like, chromatics, what?
Yeah.
I don't want to learn this.
Fair.
And then you go to find out that rudiments are a thing and drums and you're like, why, man? Everything has something complicated in it.
Yeah. Guess so. Gotta lay a foundation somewhere, right? So
yeah. So I guess leading on to that, who was the first, like, I guess with the whole like changing from like that to guitar back, like who was the first like drummer that you were like, you know what, I really, really want to do this?
Trey Cool from Green Day. I can't remember what age I was when it came out. I think I was like 9 or 10. And Green Day put out that live CD, Bullet in a Bible.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know what's up. And I watched that through like every day after school. I'd watch that like all the way through. Sometimes like 3 times in a row, I'd watch that CD. And just watching him play the kit, like, I mean, he is what he is. He's no like Neil Peart or like some crazy drummer. But at the same time, like, the music really resonated with me, and I was a huge fan of Billy Joel and like everything that Green Day was doing. It was just like so in line with like where I was in life at that time. I mean, like, it's silly to say that because I was so young, but it just like, I don't know, it gave me a release for all the energy that was inside. And like a lot of the shit that I was kind of feeling at that point in my life, just like, I don't know, I never really was that kid who would fit in. I'd be the kid who would like call out on a bunch of days, faking sick, trying to get away from everything because it just didn't work with who I was. So like seeing American Idiot and like, or listening to American Idiot and like all the songs and like the lyrics and what like Billy Joel had created with that project, and then watching that live CD over and over and over again and seeing these like 3 dudes just completely captivate like 100,000+ people 2 days in a row, just like totally took me by surprise. I like couldn't believe that was a thing, that was real. And after that, like, I obsessed over Trey Cool, and I was like, I have to do this. I have to do what he did. And I started like very first interest in the drums, I guess, like where it got serious was when I saw that, and I would go up to my bedroom and I would like air drum, and I'd watch him on my TV, like my little fucking like 12-inch TV with a VHS slot in the bottom.
Oh, yo, you had it pimping at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he was decked out, dog. Yeah, for sure. So I would watch it on that, and I'd like try to follow his movements. I was like, why is he doing, like, I would air drum along to it. I didn't figure anything out, truthfully, but I thought I was playing it. So it was cool. I'd sit there at my desk and just like hit stuff with my sticks. And then shortly after, my parents got me like a full size kit, and I was like, I need lessons now. So yeah, man, Trey Cool was huge for me.
So I guess like now growing up through that, like, obviously, like, I love Trey Cool too. Like, I mean, he's not like a big inspiration to why I got behind a kit. Mine was way over my head in Travis Barker, and just not wanting to understand how he was so technical on making such insane beats and making them all seem so fluid by moving so fast. And so that was a big thing for me. But I grew up in, like, my mom was a punk, and my dad was all like Slipknot, Metallica, Slayer. So I grew up in a very nice mesh of it. And then Elvis and Bob Marley and Pink and Rihanna came along the way, and kind of like, oh, okay, there's a whole nother genre. But like growing up, like, did that ever change for you? Like, is there another drummer now that you're like, oh yeah, like I could see a lot of like me in that too?
Oh yeah. Like Trey Cool inspired me to play the kit, but like I didn't learn anything watching him. It was like Luke Holland was the big one. Like Luke Holland was taken off on YouTube right around the time where I decided I was going to take this seriously. And that was like super convenient because he was taken off, and I needed somebody to learn to teach me how to play drums like I wanted to play it. And he was playing exactly what I wanted to be able to do. So I just watched his videos, and like my first, I would say probably like 10 videos on YouTube were just like videos that he had already done. So like OG Loco, he had already done OG Loco. I covered that, and I covered it because I learned it watching him play it, and like so on and so forth. There was a bunch of examples of stuff like that where it was just like Luke Holland. And yeah, like I would sit there with like a laptop beside me and watch his YouTube videos from left to right. And I would just keep clicking backwards. Every time I made a fuck up, I'd click backwards, like over and over. And that's how I learned to drum in so many ways, you know? So Luke Holland was probably like the biggest influence on me as far as like actually learning the kit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel you on that. So I read somewhere that you actually had a band.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of bands.
Like early on, like what was the first band? Like, was it a cover band or was it like your own stuff?
At 16, I dropped out of high school. No, 15. I can't remember. No. At 15. At 15-ish, I decided I wanted to do this for real. Like I wanted a career in music. So I recorded my first drum cover at 15. And then at 16, I got picked up by this band that had like tours lined up, like actual, like it wasn't real tours. It was like we're going to be in the van for four shows in a row, like over the weekend or something, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, it would be like the smallest of little weekend runs. And then like slowly we kind of moved out from that. And that band was called Shout for Serenity. And there was four of us. It was like pop rock. It was like Headley or like, I don't know, Faber Drive. We played shows with Faber Drive, which was like a highlight of my early on. Cause that was like some of the biggest shows I had got to play at that point. But yeah, so we, I dropped out of high school to do that. Cause it got to the point where like going to practice and playing shows, like just wasn't working with going to school every day. And I had so much, and like, I was already kind of not in school. Like I would just show up to every class, like baked out of my mind and sit in the back, listening to music, thinking to myself, like, this is not going to matter in 5 years, get the hell out of my face kind of thing. So, So I dropped out pretty quick after that when I got the opportunity to play. And then I had like, yeah. So then with that band, the lead singer, he was on this show here in Canada called the YTV's The Next Star. And it was kind of like, it's kind of like a family, you know, Family Channel or no. What do you guys in the States? It's Disney Channel. It was kind of like Disney Channel. So it was like a kid version of American Idol, but on a Canadian TV show, on a Canadian TV channel for kids. And You had like the rules were you couldn't be older than like 18 or 16 or something to audition. So he was like 15 years old or something. And he auditioned and all the kids were like 15 or 16. And he was one of the he competed on the show and he was one of the finalists on the show. And he got a huge deal with them through all that. And he like did a bunch of, music videos. Like he did three music videos that ended up on Canadian television. And everybody knew who he was because of that. Like he was like among the kids, it was just like something you'd see on commercial or whatever. Right.
Right.
So I knew who he was because of that. And like, he needed a band. So I ended up being the drummer in the band and the band was called Show for Serenity. It was that first band. And then we went out and played shows and everywhere we go, people would be like, wait, is that the kid from The Next Star? And we're like, yes, that's him. Like, whatever.
No, we exist too.
Yeah, we exactly. Cause at that time it was literally just four fucking egos trying to compete for the spotlight. So, So that was like the first band I played in. And then there was three bigger bands after that, but I like countless many other smaller bands that I like when I say bigger, I don't mean bigger as relatively speaking. I mean, bigger as in like bands that I spent years with and working towards stuff on. And then there was a bunch of bands that were like, you know, friend of mine needs a punk rock drummer for a show in a garage or what the fuck, like stuff like that. Like there was a ton of that, in between all of that. So I don't know how many bands I've played in, no way to be able to tell that, but there was four big bands that were like, I was serious about it. I was like contributing. We were recording, writing, working towards like label opportunities, touring with like the one band came later called Aspire. That was pretty cool too. Cause we got opportunities with like Aspire signed with Outer Loop Records, which is somehow partnered with Rise Records. I wasn't in charge of the band, so I didn't really get how any of it went down. I just kind of showed up for the shows and played the songs, but we got a lot of cool opportunities. Like we played shows with For All Those Sleeping, Crown the Empire, For All I Am, Palisades. We did the Mind Games Palisade CD release tour up the East Coast. So we got a bunch of really cool opportunities. That was like my third bigger project, and that was really cool. That showed me what touring was like, and I got to like be on stage and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I on the record, I love Palisades. I found their really old stuff and I was like, wait a minute, they've sounded the same the whole time. Amazing group of people. I also know, do you know who the band Tetrarch is?
No, I don't know that band.
They just recently signed with Napalm Records. They were independent for like 10 years, but I met the entire band and we're all really cool on my Twitch channel. They actually allowed me, like they talked to their manager and their record label and stuff. And I have the ability to play their music on my Twitch, which is sick.
That's like a huge thing right now is the DCMA stuff.
Yeah, man. And then you got people like Ronnie Radke who have a whole discography of stuff that he owns that he can play on his own. You're like, well, it was nice while it was there.
Yeah.
Great dude, by the way. Great dude.
Oh yeah.
What is the first kit that you ever like remember like actually like getting and
It was a Pacific kit, which is Pacific is like the budget version of PDP. And I got that. It was just like two racks. It was the same kit everybody starts on. It's like two racks mounted off the bass drum, a floor tom, and then like one cymbal that's like a crash ride, so you can do both on it, and a hi-hat. And they were camber cymbals, which is the budget version of Sabian. And it was like, I don't know. I think my parents bought it for like $500 or something. And that was the first kit. I got that for Christmas and I played the living shit out of it. And then they upgraded me like 3 or 4 Christmases later to a Tama Hyperdrive, which is a kit that I talk about in a lot of like the videos that I do where I'm talking about drum sets. So I've always loved the Tama Hyperdrive stuff just because of how affordable it is and how, like how unbelievably like you, there's so much value in that kit. It's so like affordable and there's so much value with those kits because they come with the shell or the hardware packs as well, which is crazy. So yeah. And then after that I had a Crush kit and now I got a DW kit. So
that DW kit's gorgeous. Absolutely. Thanks, gorgeous. Man. What would be like a kit if money was no limit that you would just be like, yeah, I want it.
Oh, just the DW collectors. There's like two that I have had my eyes on. I like the wood finishes too. Like the glossy wood finishes. There's a few DW, like there's a $6,000 DW collectors kit that I've had my eye on for a few years that hopefully down the line I'll be able to grab. But yeah, I have a DW collector snare right now and then DW performance series shells. So basically just like the upgrade version of the kit I'm already on, but I really love the kit that I'm on. The only thing I would change about the kit that I'm on is I really wish it had a second floor tom. Like I really wish my sizes were like 12, 14, 16 for the toms. That'd be ideal. I would love to have one up, two down. But the shell pack that I got just didn't have the second floor. And I was already so used to just one up, one down. So I was like, all right, I'll just do this for now. But the next kit's got to have the two and two, or sorry, one and two rather.
It's got to be bigger. Doesn't, for sure. If I'm correct, doesn't Jay Weinberg play DWs as well?
Jay from Slipknot?
Yeah.
I think he plays SJC. Pretty sure he plays SJC.
I saw something about a drummer I follow that's got this new DW kit that they're working on.
I don't know. There's lots of guys on DW. Like yeah. Luke Collins, one of them. Thomas Lang, you know. I don't know.
So jumping back to like the touring stuff, like where is, okay, so this is like a two-part question, but like where is the best place you've ever played? And then where's like the place that you just wish you never had went back to or that you never played? Not to throw any cities or anything under the bus, but.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know about worst. See, the thing about worst is like the worst shows I've ever played had really not a whole lot to do with the venue as much as just like, you know, the band, like the group of guys I was with, we fucked something up because we were stupid and young, you know. It's like,
yeah,
not anything serious, just like mistakes were made, you know, because we were learning. So there's a lot of hard shows that were in great venues, you know. So I don't know about like the worst. I would say the worst shows were in some of the nicest venues I came to play later on, but there's a place in Virginia. I can't remember the name of it. It was an awesome venue. It was, there was a really nice upstairs. I can't remember anything about it except for I knew it was in Virginia and I really enjoyed that venue. We played that twice when I was in Aspire and, let me think, it had just the way it was set up. There was like layers to it. There was like a pit layer that was the lowest. And then the next layer up was like a crowd layer that was on the outside. And then the next layer up was the stage layer. And then there was a top layer up back with a private like booth with that where like our manager at the time, Mike, he was up in that like top booth part. I don't know. Just the venue itself was really cool. It was like such a cool experience. So that would be a spot. I think it was like the Empire or something. I don't know. I can't remember.
That sounds absolutely dope. If I ever got to play in a spot like that, I might shit myself.
Yeah, it wasn't super huge. Like it was probably like 1,000 cap room, but yeah, it was really fun. It was also really cold though. That was one tour where like every time, like the van kept freezing shut. It was so cold on that tour. It was crazy too cold. It was like freezing, like frost warnings. Like if you're outside, you're going to die warnings for that.
Oh my.
Crazy. Yeah. It was stupid. It was stupid cold. The venue was freezing. I remember sound checking the whole tour in like docks and like multiple sweaters and a parka the whole tour. And like, I wouldn't take my gloves off because your hands would freeze. Even inside the venues, they wouldn't have the heat running in advance. So like, it would just be like, it was so fucking cold, man. It was like, I could not get my feet warm the whole tour. I could not get my feet warm. Yeah, but I don't know, man. I don't know. Honestly, like I don't have a ton of tour experience. I wish I had more because like I got sick of all of it pretty quick and like shit just kept not working out for me. I felt like, and so I just took to YouTube and I was like, you know what? Like it's hard to be a drummer and run yourself as a solo project. You pretty much can't do it because it's just drums. Yeah. So where can I do that? Oh, I can do that on YouTube. So that's kind of what came brought about the channel.
So like the first time that you got on stage, what was it like? Because I noticed you talked to, I guess, because he's not really the drummer, but is the drummer of I Prevail. You talked to him about that same kind of scenario, like the first time you got on stage.
Oh, yeah. Right. So the first time I got on stage, I was in high school. It was at a show that the music production class put on every year. I can't remember what the name of the show was. It doesn't matter. It was just in the high school, like cafeteria or whatever. I remember we played two songs is all we could put together. No, we might've played three. I think we played two covers and one original, and it was a group of guys. The band was called Days to Desire or something like that. I don't know. Some stupid high school name, but, we played that stage, and, I took it super seriously. Cause at the time, like I was like, yo, this is going to be there. Like I was in grade 10 too. This was right before I dropped out. This is last year, I think I was in school. And I was like, this is probably gonna be the rest of my life. So I got to take this super seriously. But the band didn't really, because it was just like a class project for them. But that being said, I think we played like a Chili Peppers cover, and we played, I can't remember the other two songs. One of them was an original we came up with. It was okay. And whatever. But that being said, like, what was it like? I remember it being over way too fast. Like I got off stage and thinking like, wow, like, we practiced for like a month for like 2 minutes, you know? I remember thinking like, fuck, I wish I could do that like 10 more times. Or I wish I could do that again tomorrow night. And that was when I was like, fuck, I have to figure out how to tour. Because if you're on tour and you get to do that, even if it's three songs, I don't care. If I get to do that every single night, that will be perfect. That will be exactly how I want to spend the rest of my time around here on these parts, planet Earth and all. So I remember feeling that was like when it all kind of came together, and I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing. I figured
it out. You had that moment. It was like, this is it. The music, yeah. Drums, this is where I need to be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, going into it, I had a hunch, but after that it was like solidified. It was like, well, there'll be nothing else. Like I'll work minimum wage until this works out, and if I'm stuck on minimum wage the rest of my life, so be it. But this is what I'm doing. I'm not settling down anywhere else. Like, don't even allow the possibility of anything else is how I looked at it. So
makes sense. So you love talking about Architects. Absolutely love them to death. Two part question. Number one, have you heard the new album?
No, we haven't jammed it yet. We have we got a bunch of stuff going on. It's good.
Fantastic.
That's what people
album.
Keep telling me.
But other than Architects, who would you put up there as your other top four in the top five?
I guess just like bands that, I don't know. That's tough because I'm kind of like moving out of metal. Like I don't really listen or play metal anymore. To be truthful, like my current rotation is like a bunch of like R&B or pop punk artists. So I don't really listen to metal right now. So it's hard to say. Even that band, like, when it's going to be tough for us to do those videos if we do them, just because like I don't think Lindsay's heart and my heart is really in the genre anymore like we used to. I'm like even moving away from the drum set personally, because like I'm working on like vocals and guitar is like my focus right now.
So what we're hearing, like, is a cover album maybe, or an album coming out of just Wyatt Stav.
I definitely will not do covers with that instrument. That the covers are just for the drums. But yes, there will be a record down the line that'll just be me on it that I'll be working on. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe a little exclusives there. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, this is like So that's kind of where my head's at, man. So it's a tough question to ask right now, just because, like, I don't know, like 3 years ago, I would have had such a great response for that. But I'm kind of like, I'm in a big, big transition phase in my life right now, where I'm kind of moving out of the old me and into a new me. So I don't know what the future is going to, anyways, back up. Okay. I'll say, like, as far as bands, thinking back to like progression, as far as like my personal stuff. So Disturbed was the first metal band I ever listened to, and I still jam their stuff to this day. So Disturbed's up there 100%. Asking Alexandria was my whole high school, and like the whole time while I was
that's
working
your ribs,
towards,
man.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's up. So Asking Alexandria for sure. Architects for sure. Those are the big three for me, probably out of the metal scene. Architects, especially for Lost Scale, Lost Forever, and All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us. I didn't really dig Holy Hell as much, and we'll see when I get the chance to listen to the new record. But yeah, Architects for sure. And then outside of those three, man, like I can't really put anything up next to those three. There's like a million other bands, obviously, that we've all jammed over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Like so many, right? But those three were just big ones for me because of where I was when they were putting out music and how it's just all personal, you know, and how influenced I was by their music specifically, especially with my instrument, because all three of those have incredible drummers and unbelievable rhythm sections, you know, like between the bass and the guitar. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Between the bass and the drums of all three of those bands, it's just like, that's what's most noticeable. So that really, really helped me at the kit to like become a better player, I feel like. So those are the three. I can't really give you five. I can definitely give you those three though.
Oh, I have not ran like that since I think football freshman year. Yeah, I feel you on that though. The whole like bands, like I'm progressing out too. I used to be really big into, like, my mom grew me up with like the Deftones and like the Meat Puppets, Circle Jerk, stuff like that. And then my stepdad grew me up into Slipknot and Metallica and stuff, and I'm kind of phasing out of that. I still keep a good bit of it, because I mean, a lot of it still speaks, but I've kind of found myself more mellowed out, not as nearly channeling the aggression levels.
For sure, man. Everybody's got to grow up eventually, I guess.
So, and then I guess going off those top three, like, do you have a favorite song that you just, you could warm up with and be like, yeah, okay, we're good. Like you just, you could sit behind the kit and just bow.
Nah, not really. That's too many songs, man.
No. I feel you that. So what was the first thing that you learned on drums? Like, whether it be
Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day.
Okay. What was the hardest thing for you to learn?
The Saw is the Law by what's the band called? Whitechapel. That was the toughest one. I had to get up to 235 beats per minute, and
they got some crazy stuff.
It just about killed me trying to learn that song. I spent 2 months on that track. Even this last song I did was real tough. I just posted a cover a couple days ago, and I spent a month on that. So,
how long did it take you for the drum solo, quote unquote?
Oh, that
quote
was
unquote,
pretty quick. That was honestly, I'm kind of like, I wish I had done a better job with it. That was like, they were super, I don't know, dude. They were super unorganized and unprepared for that festival, and like they got a lot of backlash from it. But basically they gave all the drummers like no notice at all. And I had like, they gave me 2 weeks total. But I just like, it was last minute and I can't just drop other things. So really I did the whole thing in like, I think it was like 2 days. I think like one day I hit up Adam Tumanaro and I was like, hey man, I got this thing I need a track for. Can I borrow one of yours? I'll give you credit in the YouTube post. And he was like, yeah, sure. Pick one. Just let me know which one you want. So I paid for it. I bought the one off him that I wanted. And then literally the next day, like it was like a few hours practicing over top of it. I came up with a little lick thing real quick. And I was like, Lindsay, come here, like film this. This should work. And then send it off to Chris and then like send it out the next day. So it was super fast, man. I could probably do a lot better. I thought it turned out pretty good considering the timeline. It was really stressful for me, and I was super just stressed out, like kind of irritated that like such a large company kind of put us all through what they did with that, because it was just like super unprofessional, like giving us such short timelines and like, yeah, no notice on nothing. I don't mean to bash the modern drummers.
Oh, no, so I can understand that. Like,
yeah, it was just super frustrating. My agent and my girlfriend, Lindsay and Natalie, those two got me through it. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have done that video, because I was just fucking so pissed.
I will say personally, for me watching it, like I watched it and I was like, yo, this makes me fall in love with it just even more. Like I will say that honestly, you are in the top five people that make me love drumming, because you have such an enthusiasm and such a very nice, like you're precise with everything. It's amazing to watch you drum.
Thank you, dude. I appreciate that.
So that's another reason why this is such a big podcast for me, because it's like, holy shit. So then also going into that, like, because I know you have an electric kit, you have an acoustic kit. How would you rank them? Like, would you say like you're more of an acoustic guy or balls to the wall or electric or?
What do you mean? I don't know what you mean.
Like
nobody
at a
really
like
plays electric kits, right? They're kind of just for practice.
Okay, so then I guess out of your like what like to you appeals more, like an acoustic kit or just a full
like
throttle
a, like
kit?
There's a drum set and then there's toys, and the electric kits are just for when you can't play the acoustic. That's how I look at it, you know what I mean? It's just a toy.
Makes sense.
It's just like plastic. It's not a real drum set. You're not making sound. It's not,
yeah,
you know. So like when I play the electric kit, I do a lot. It's just there's two big reasons there, right? So there's three big reasons. One is it's just like controlled, and the control level of it enables me to dial in what I'm learning to a higher level, because yeah, I can take my time and have the computer right there and have complete control over the volume level and all that kind of stuff. So I can learn things really well, like the muscle memory for my covers I put in through the electric kit. Then the second thing is, you know, you can't play, like if, like I used to wake up at 2 a.m. when I had this crazy like grind phase before going full time on YouTube. And when I was doing that, man, like I couldn't be getting up at 2 a.m. and playing acoustic. So I had to have the electric, you know what I'm saying? And the third reason, honestly, is just sparing my ears. Like if I'm every single day practicing on acoustic, after a while, my ears are just ringing out of my skull. No matter how much ear protection you pack in there, you know, you do the plugs and you put the 30 decibel muffs over top, like you, it still is loud, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, like I will use the electric kit about 50% of the time to spare myself from all of what I just described with the acoustic. But acoustic drums are real drums. Like that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like, yeah, you can't record an electric kit and it sound like ever sound like a real drum set. So it's not a real drum set, right? It doesn't, there's no human element to it.
It's right.
Not
it's all machine.
Yeah. There's not wood reverberating. It's just a computer program, you know, noticing that you're hitting pads. That's not really, you know what I mean? Even with electric guitars, like electric guitar is not an electric drum set. Like there's no parallel there, you know, cause like with an electric guitar, like it's just changing, you know, like the wood body and the opening and the hollow space that is the acoustic guitar is what creates the sound at a higher level, but the strings are what makes the sound originally. And the mm-hmm. strings don't change either way. It's the exact same thing. But when you play mesh heads, that's not like a,
right. It's also a different set. Feel too.
Totally different feel.
100%. Cause you just kind of know that you're just, it's not real.
It's not real. You're not hitting as hard. The distances aren't as big between one another. You know what I mean? So yeah, like each kit has a reason, has like a purpose, like any good tool, right? And just use them for what they're intended for, you know.
So what is your preference then on like because I know you've talked about it through a couple different videos, but like cymbals, heads, kick pedals, sticks are kind of where I really want to go. Cause
sure. I'll start with that. That one actually is the easiest cause all the others change, but the sticks never do. The sticks are Thomas Lang Signature Series by Vic Firth. And that's pretty much all it's been for like last 8 years, I think maybe less, maybe four to 6 years, but yeah, that's the sticks. The cymbals don't matter. You know, I need cymbals. If a company is down to hit me up and send over some cymbals, then I'll play them. You know, that's pretty much how it goes. Like I don't do endorsements or any of that, just because of the nature of what the player I am. You know, like I'm a YouTube guy. If you want me to talk about you in a video, I'll do that. You know, and you send me the stuff, and I'll have it, and I won't have to pay for it, which will make it so that I can play the gear for as long as I can. You know, as long as it doesn't break. So I just go from like whatever I'm interested in, you know, like, and I don't really worry about brand like loyalty or any of that. You know what I mean? Cause it's just like, I don't know. Like I like the Holy Chinas by Sabian a lot. I think that's like an amazing China symbol. Like every Joey Sturgis record has a 19-inch Holy China on it. You know, like every Asking Alexandria early record, Of Mice and Men early records, Motionless White early records, I See Stars early records, they all have the 19-inch Holy China. That's such a great China. But then again, like, you know, the 19 inch medium thin crash by Meinl from the Byzance line is a really great, just like chorus verse crash. So I put them both at the kick. Cause like, why not? You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, that's how I kind of go about that. I don't like, I know I used to go where I'd have the whole kit would be one brand. And that was like important to me, different lines, but one brand. And I don't know why I ever thought about it like that. You know what I mean? They're all the same bronze, you know, it's
right.
All B20 bronze at the end of the, or what is it? B8, B8 bronze at the end of the day. Is it? Which one's the higher one? I'm messing this up. Hang on. Byzance Bronx. I think it's no, it's not gonna tell me. Anyways, it's the higher end brand. Oh, here it is. B8, made from B8. Vinyl. Oh, that's the HCS. So the B8's the HCS, and that's the cheap line. So it's gotta be B20. So there you go. So it's all the same bronze. It just depends on how they cut it, how they like what the recipe is with the alloy or whatever, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Like how much bronze is in it or whatever. So yeah, I just play whatever I can get my hands on and sounds good.
Makes sense. Solid on that. What about what about heads? Do you the same way with heads or?
Yeah, pretty much. Attack drum heads just sent me like 6 months worth of heads. Like
I saw that.
Yeah. So like in that box, I was like, well, now I don't have to pay for them for the next little bit. So I just, they're pretty chill too. I like really respect that company. They like hit me up. And the thing about them too is like, so the whole music industry is 10 years behind where they should be. And what's great about COVID is they're finally learning their lesson that they should have been online worrying about guys like me. I'm a lot quicker. And I mean, that sounds super egotistic, but the fact of the matter is just, well, the fact of the matter is, yeah, to a degree, the fact of the matter is just is like, a lot of these companies only are concerned with touring musicians, but what it just doesn't make sense to me how, you know, a company like Zildjian or Meinl or DW will, I can speak to the ones who actually have passed me up. So a company like Tama or Meinl who have passed me up and said, no, we're not interested. He doesn't tour. Those companies say that. And then right after they said that, well, guess what? Now none of your artists are touring and I still have 100,000 views per drum cover. And you could have had your products in those covers, but you decided that I wasn't touring. So it's like, why'd you do that? You know, you've done messed up, you know, it just seems so silly. Like go where the audience is, you know, and more importantly, like when you go to a show, even if you're a drummer at a show, how the fuck, like you don't really fucking care what the kid's made of. Even if you're a drummer at the show, you're probably maybe you notice, oh, that's cool. He plays those in cymbals. And like, maybe. And the only way you're going to know is like, if you're really paying attention to the kit and he hits a cymbal and it flexes all the way towards you and you see the Zildjian logo across the bottom, that's the only way you're going to know about
that. Other than that, you just don't care.
But you watch a video, you know, you watch a Nadoop Sastry video, an Alex Rudinger video, a Luke Holland video. Guess what? All you're seeing is his brands in your face. The entire 3 minutes, 4 minutes of that performance, whether it be an original or a cover, he's doing a great job at the kit and he's got the brands that are behind him for that, whatever, you know? So just seems so silly to me how like, you know, they'll prioritize touring, but like who the fuck can even tell when you're on a dark stage? Yet these videos are like the whole point of a video is to make the playing look incredible. Well, that requires lighting the kit in the best way possible and miking the kit in the best way possible. So you're getting a much better representation of what the product is in a YouTube video compared to a noisy stage environment. So just seems silly to me. I in the past have spoken with companies about becoming an endorsed artist. And after so many no's and then other companies like Sweetwater coming out to me and just like supplying me with enough gear that I didn't even need the endorsements. Then later down the line, and then I started to get kind of a little bitter about it, which is just more, you know, my ego again. But yeah, I would get bitter about it. I'd be like, no, not interested. I can get this gear wherever I want to get this gear. It's not, you know, if you're going to literally say no to me the first time around, then I'm not interested on the second pass. Cause you know, now that, you know, COVID's a thing and you're all your touring artists are off the road.
And now they're watching you going, oh shit. We could have done this.
Who knows? I don't know if that's the case. You know, maybe there's more to it than any of it. Maybe the reason, because the only thing I know is that I got the email that said, no go, you don't tour enough. So, okay. Like I can only speak to that. And that's my opinion on it is what I just said kind of thing. So
makes sense. Another weird thing, because I personally, like anytime I've ever been in a kit, I can't do a single damn stick trick to save my life. How long did it take you to like master that craft?
I don't know. Like the thing about stick tricks is you just want to like incorporate one stick trick. I only do three, and you just want to incorporate one into your practice. So here's the thing is like when I learn the songs, I have a punchback point where I will have either a loop inside of a DAW, which is how I do it now. But back in the day, I literally just had my cursor lined up at a timestamp on YouTube for the song or the video or whatever. And every time I fucked up, I would reach to my right with the stick and I would literally click using the trackpad on the laptop with the stick. So it wouldn't move the cursor, right? Because if you use your finger, you might touch the the cursor and it might jolt to the left or the right or whatever. So,
because
I had a MacBook, right? So it's like the touchpads on those are like very specific for the finger. So I would take the stick and I would tap the touchpad or the trackpad and it would bounce back to that point where I knew I had it learned up until that point. And then I would listen and play along and then I'd fuck up and do it again. Every time I did that while I was waiting or after I'd fucked up, the first thing I would do before I touched the pad is I would just try a stick trick. And like, it wasn't even like I was working towards learning how to do that. It was just, I saw guys doing it. A friend of mine too, like my buddy, Matthew Runaway. I played in a bunch of bands with him and he always said like, you got to do that Luke Holland one where you toss it backwards, catch it and then come down on a cymbal. That's like the coolest thing ever. And it wasn't Luke Holland who did that first, obviously, like, you know, Adam Gray's done it. Matt Griner's done it, right? Like a bunch of guys have done that before Luke. But Luke was the one that him and I saw doing it and we were like, that's so cool. So Matt was like, you got to learn how to do this one, man. And we got to bring it on stage with us. Like it has to happen because then people are going to like think it's cool. And I was like, okay, yeah, add to the show or whatever. So I just started doing it and I would have like, I had like a stick, you know, the cup, like the stick, like where the sticks go in the cup thing. Yeah, whatever. I had one of those attached to the side of my electric kit. And I would stock it with all my sticks. So I would like drop a stick every time I tossed it, pick a new stick up and then just play from where the pushback point was, drop the stick after the fuck up, pick it up, click the thing, do it again, click the thing, do it again, like over and over. Every fuck up, I did a stick trick, click the thing, start over again. And eventually I would get up and walk around my practice space and pick up like all of like the 20 sticks that I dropped. I'd pick them all up, put them back in the cup holder and then just repeat the process. And like, it wasn't too long doing that until I started to actually get the flow of it, like started to feel the toss and get the muscle memory and how to get it down. So yeah, that's pretty much it, man. Like, I don't know actually how long it took. It didn't take too long. It took long to like get comfortable. Like now I can sit there and do it blindfolded or whatever. Like years later of the same thing. Like I still fuck up, you know, toss a stick, press like, reloop it, you know, like
back to it.
Yeah, so
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah,
so for the people that are not as savvy with drums but are in it, because obviously like I'm intermediate, you're I would argue way more advanced than I am, like even with knowledge of drums. There's this big thing that's going around on YouTube where everybody is interviewing people saying chops or grooves and what is better in the drum world, chops or grooves?
This is a thing right now?
This is a thing right now.
Oh, okay. What is better? I don't know. I don't think there is a better. That's like a silly question. It's like, what is better, chops or groove? It's like, well, you need chops to be able to groove. So what the fuck? You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, there's people that are going on Omegle like and like, shit and playing it. And
that's like being like... That's like living in a place where you have four seasons and being like, what's better, winter or summer? And it's like, well, you can't have the appreciation for the summer if you don't go through the cold winter. So I would say that you can't have either without the other. You know, it's like yin and yang. Like, I don't think you can separate the two. There's no way, you know, like the tightest groove players are always going to have better chops than everybody else. Cause like, that's how you learn pocket, is you become a proficient chop, like, or proficient at chopping, you know? So I don't think you can have one without the other. It'd be kind of silly to try and disconnect it. And no player who has groove doesn't have chops. I've never seen it. I've never seen somebody groove tightly and then not be able to break into gospel chops at the end of the song. Never seen it.
That'd never. Be weird, wouldn't it?
It'd be so weird. It'd be so weird to see a really tight pocket player and then him not be able to shred in some kind of linear phrasing or whatever. You know, there's no, I've never seen it personally.
Yeah, dude, if you just go on YouTube and look it up, there's people all over like Omegle and shit, like being like, what picks up more girls? We're going to find out today. And it's like, what?
Oh my God.
What the fuck is this? This is literally just clickbait at this point. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. There's some phenomenal drummers that do it, but it's like you're doing it for no purpose, because I'm right there with you. You can't have one without the other.
This is kind of like the whole, like, you know how there's like this group of 9-year-olds on the internet who think that triggers are some like cheating mechanism or something. Like this is in that school of thought where it's like, clearly you don't know anything about the drums, you know? Yeah. Like that's how I feel about that, you know.
I used to think that growing up, man. I was like, oh, triggers are cheating, and then I found out and I was like, oh yeah, shit, like, not at all. it's not at all.
Yeah. Like if you say triggers is cheating, that's like being like, because what is an electric kit? It's a group of triggers. So
yeah,
like, yeah, right? It's like, no point to playing an electric kit if triggers are cheating. So
I mean, some people argue that electric drumming is cheating because there's no, I mean, you do have to put effort, well, that's, but you don't have to put nearly the effort in.
Yeah, it's a toy, 100%. I get that. Yeah. I mean, electric drumming, like, nobody plays, no real drummer is ever going to gig with an electric kit, you know? I've never seen it. Same thing, right? No real drummer is going to say that trigger is cheating. No real drummer is going to differentiate between chops and groove because they're the same damn thing. And no real drummer is going to say that triggers have anything to do with skill level. Triggers are just a way of, it's a mixing tool, you know?
Right.
You want to talk about production, talk about production. Don't bring it into drumming. It's not.
Yeah, that's like saying, like, oh, your mic is making your drum sound better. That's the point of it.
Yeah. Wow. I like that. There you go. That's exactly
what it is. Just came up with that off the top of my head.
Perfect. Write it down. You can title this episode, your mic. Wyatt Stav, your mic is making your drum sound better.
Oh, dude, that'd be amazing. Just go around and talk to drummers and be like, you know, your microphone makes your drum sound better, right? Well, no shit.
Yeah.
The reason we have so much money invested in our kits and our production.
Yeah, exactly.
We want it to sound the best and the tightest.
Yeah.
Well, like, switching gears now, for the people that don't watch Wyatt, A, you need to watch him. Link is going to definitely be in the description for his channel. Amazing dude. He's also a Twitch streamer as well.
Yeah.
When did you decide, like, hey, I want to play video games as well with people watching?
Oh, when did I decide I wanted to do that? That's like, dude, I watched, like, do you know what Justin TV is? Okay. I'm like from the Justin TV days, and I played StarCraft 2 and like religiously before all of it. So it was like World of Warcraft into StarCraft 2 into watching Justin TV into Justin TV becoming Twitch, and then me watching all the early Twitch streamers and being obsessed with Twitch my entire childhood. So like the dream of streaming for people was like there since those days. And I was like 13 at that time. So that would have been well over 10 years ago now, because I'm 25 now. So yeah, it would have been, yeah, probably.
I'm like, no kidding. There's no way you're 25.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you mean? Why? Am I older? Do you think I'm
no,
older?
Like, you carry yourself like you're wiser. Like you carry yourself, oh, really? Like you're older.
Oh, thanks, yeah, man. That's cool then.
you're literally like, I'll be 24 in July.
You will be?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You seem older too.
Oh, thank you. I take that greatly.
I thought you were like 27 or something. I don't know.
Oh no. I wish.
Really thinking about it, but if I had, like, if I had to, I would have said 27 probably.
I'll take that. Most people tell me I look 12, and it's like, wow, awesome. True. What 12-year-old do you know with facial hair?
Yo, my there's a story in that, but I don't got time.
But yeah, so what's your favorite game to play? What, like, on Twitch, and then what's your favorite game to play off Twitch? Like, what's your big
real
kick right
real
now?
Quick? I'm gonna back up actually. So the dream was always there. But then I had then I had YouTube like explode for me. And when it exploded for me, I thought, hey, I have a platform now. You know, maybe I can fucking, you know, I can make this.
Make that leap.
That's the motion right there. That's exactly it. So that's what happened. That's why it came about. Because I've wanted to do it the whole damn time. But I was like, look, I don't have the hours it's going to take to build this on my own. You know, like if I did it the organic route, which was just be an unknown, and start streaming on Twitch, I didn't have the time. Oh, okay. My bad, dog.
Oh no, you're good. It took me a little over a year to get almost 1.3K.
There you go. That's really good though, actually. You did that in a year?
Yeah, a little over a year.
Nice. Yeah. That's really good. So yeah, you know what's up. So you know the time it takes. I didn't have that time. So I just built the platform over on YouTube, and then I switched it over, and I was really blessed that I had some people receive it and were down for it. So, yeah, that's how that came about. And it was a childhood dream of mine, like I was saying. So what games, that's what you're asking. Okay. Yeah. What games? I don't know. I've streamed a bunch of games, man. I streamed, like right before WoW, the new WoW expansion came out. And then after it came out, I streamed a ton of that. That was probably the most amount of hours streamed, because the week that the new expo came out, I played like every day from like 9 a.m. to like 10 p.m. and I would stream it like the whole time. Like there were streams that were easily 14 hour streams that day.
I
know?
Wish.
Yeah. So I played every day for the first week and a bit like that. And then even leading up to that, I was playing every night, like I was streaming every night, like 4 hours a night playing, getting my character ready for the expansion kind of thing. So that was a big one. I played Warzone on stream a bit. I played like Among Us. That was popping off around the time when I started streaming. I played what was some of the others? Fall Guys had just come out when I started streaming, so I streamed the hell out of that. That was a lot of fun. You know how it is. All like the typical stream ones. Like we did Phasmophobia for a bit. That was pretty fun. Yeah, just the typical stream games, and then World of Warcraft was like the biggest. So.
So what's your favorite game to play? Like, and you're like, yeah, I'm just not streaming this period.
I don't play games right now. After that WoW binge, I actually just like quit all games. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like,
I have a hell of a schedule. Don't have time.
Yeah. Cause I like, okay. So I like whip it backlash the other way, or it like, you know, like whiplash back or whatever I'm trying to say, slingshot it, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I did the like ton of WoW, like I was saying, all day. And then Lindsay's at the end of the week, Lindsay's like, seriously, like your income is starting to drop. We have to start like making money again. You know, like she pulls it aside. She's like, yeah, Wyatt, like you have to go to work again. Okay. I know you getting tips or whatever the hell you do on that fucking, but we have to do real work now kind of thing. So after that, I tried to juggle the two of them for a little bit and I just ended up in a really bad place. I think a lot of it just had to do with like playing that many hours and then still being stuck inside. You know what I'm saying? It's like the whole COVID thing. Plus now we're trapped in a video game kind of thing. So
we are the simulation.
I was feeling super suffocated and I quit it all. I was like, I'm done with this. And then we went to only stream one night a week. So now we stream every Fridays, but it's not games right now. It's we do music stuff. So it's like all music, hangouts, music talks, stuff like that. So we do that every Friday. We do 5-hour streams. Me and Lindsay do 5-hour streams every Friday night. And that's how, what I've been doing with the Twitch ever since. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think it's a good balance. Like I get to do the live stuff, but then at the same, oh, and we've done some drum streams though. That was really fun too. That came about. And I've got some gear coming in the mail right now, actually, that's going to make it so that I can do those more regularly. So yeah, I'm going to just focus on the music stuff for the time being. The games will come back eventually. Just have a ton of stuff on the go. Like I said, like the whole like learning to sing and guitar stuff wasn't in like that wasn't in play when I was Twitch streaming. So I could get up, get all of my stuff done in the first like 8 to 10 hours of the day and then log on Twitch and play for 4 hours before bed and then go to sleep. And like, you know, yeah, there was some mental discipline to that kind of length of a day. But at the same time, like it was totally doable. When I added in these new goals, like, you know, live performance stuff behind the microphone for the first time. And of course, learning to play guitar to gain like the ability to speak and pitch. Like it's just that amount of time that I now, like my morning routine is like 4 hours long to further those goals. So I don't have time anymore to do that. And like that 4 hours that I do in the morning now was the 4 hours I was using in the evening to get the Twitch stuff done. So I don't have time to do it. It's just like, I have priorities over it, I guess. So
for anybody that doesn't know, YouTube is a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah.
I did it for 5 years, only hit 69 followers, like subscribers. And I was like, dude, this is bullshit. I'm putting in my life into this and I'm not getting anywhere. I jumped over to Twitch and I was like, the live aspect, because you have to edit, you have to be able to do voiceovers, you're doing drum covers, you're doing reactions. Like, you have a lot of shit on your plate.
Yeah. Only somebody who's done it can understand what I go through. So, you know what's up.
Yeah, I didn't like the video editing. I think that takes the most fucking time. And I was just like, you know what? Twitch is a thing. I like being goofy live, not having to cut that out. You get the raw me, and it just worked.
Yeah, it makes total sense, man. Yeah, YouTube is a monster. It's a total monster.
And they keep changing their policies every, 6 months?
Yeah, but that shit doesn't affect me. You gotta be like a goofball on the fringe to be affected by that. You know what I'm saying? Like, nothing, no hate whatsoever. But like, if the policy changes and you have to change the type of content you're making, the type of content you were making prior to the policy change probably wasn't the most like typical friendly type of content. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Or even people like, I knew one of my friends of mine who had a couple thousand followers who, it was a couple years ago when the content, or not the content, but like their whole system flipped. And it was like, well, now you have to have this amount of watch time and this amount of subscribers and this amount of videos to get paid. And he was like, dude, what? He goes, I just made it to where I could start, like, you know, even remotely thinking about being, you know, this being an income at all. And now you're telling me I got to work even harder for it now. Like, I'm all for it, but like, you just kept moving that rung.
Yeah, I don't word. I mean, I don't know. It took me like I was 8 years before I had like a dollar. I had two after 8 years of grinding on YouTube, I made $2 and like 23 cents or something.
Yeah. I made 13 cents in 5 years.
There you go. So that's what it looks like. And most people don't get that. They think, you know what? I'm just going to quit my job and become a YouTuber. And it's like,
yeah, no, there's a lot of shit that goes behind it. And you have to really ride that curve. You've got to be all in or all out. There's no around it.
There's no in between. But that's like that speaks to my personality again, which is like I'm that type of person. Like I can't do something unless I'm going to do it 110%. I don't have an in between. There's no in between. That was the thing with Twitch, which was like it was getting in the way of my life because I was taking that approach. I don't do shit unless it's 110. So yeah, like you people will be like, YouTube doesn't work. It's like, yes, it does. We gotta be willing to put in 10 years.
Yeah,
and
like
you,
my
and you put in 10 years. And
yeah, my mom always told me that you get one life. There's no sense in half-assing anything. You whole ass everything.
Exactly. That's my whole thing. So it's exactly it. Yeah.
I think that's the reason I act wiser than I am is because of my mom. Oh, damn, dude. Well, I know you're a busy fucking dude, so I appreciate you for even allowing me to talk to you. That this is like a fucking this is definitely a bucket list thing done.
Dude, it's my pleasure. This was a great time. Thanks for
having me. Yeah, man. You have a PO box, don't you?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I'll send you some of my merch. Some of it's okay, not even released yet, so if you wanna send me an email about like what size you wear and whatever, I'll get you some stuff sent up.
Sure, yeah, it's XL. That's
apparently. Oh, XL? Cool, yeah. Man. Yeah, I'll send you a little XL. Care package of stuff up.
Cool. XL, if we're talking the tops, and then the actual PO box is in the about section or the description of every video and the about section of the channel. So it's there. Same with
Cool. It's in the about I'll send you a care package and some stuff. And
cool.
Because, I mean, shit, you got your own clothing line.
Yes, sir.
By the way, I'll link that in the podcast, too. Go check that out. Shit's sick. Wish I could come up with designs like that.
It's not me. It's Lindsay.
You got a hell of a woman over there that's coming up with nice ass designs.
I do. She has a university degree in like clothing. So it worked out.
Oh, no shit.
Well, yeah, she went to university for fashion design at Ryerson in Toronto. So that's her whole thing. Cause she's got her own clothing line. So when we met and I told her what I was up to, I was like, you know what? I think that this could work.
I think we could be very good business partners.
Yeah, I think that this partnership will pan out. So,
and it seems like it's worked out well, and I'm happy for both of y'all. Both of y'all are hella successful in what y'all are doing. Both of y'all are hella talented in what y'all are doing.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Thank
so,
you.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that half the time, but it's always awesome to hear.
Like I said, you kind of reignited a fire in me to like even just watching you dick around in your day in the light. Like you're
Oh, you like that video?
Dude, you watching you dick around like guitar, I was like, I looked over and I was like, I could clean you off and play you.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
I do now. Like now I've got perfect.
I'm glad
I've got
I inspired.
I've got a Fender Squire that's sitting beside me. That's my electric. And then I have a 2006 Ibanez electric acoustic.
Nice.
So yeah, good little group of guitars, both of which are a pain in the dick to learn. Cause I was learning how to play Walk the other day and I was like, what the fuck? How do you bend the first fret? Yeah, man, I appreciate you for talking to me. It's been a hell of a podcast. I definitely appreciate even the insight that you've had. And links obviously will be linked to your stuff in the description. And cool. Yeah, man, I definitely appreciate it. So for anybody that, once again, anybody that doesn't know who this dude is, go check him out. He'll blow you the fuck away.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. I hope you didn't set the expectations too high, but
okay, then in my personal opinion he'll blow you
word up.
Yeah, man, it's been fun talking. I appreciate it.
Cool, dude. All right, yeah, thanks for having me. I'm gonna get back to work and wish you all the best. Yo, and yeah, send me the link so I can like tweet about it when it comes out or whatever.
Oh no shit, thank you, man.
Absolutely, for sure.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.